to health problems, and Thomas is giving it.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, as Gert-Jan mentioned, unfortunately Randy couldn't make it, and then we decided that we take the opportunity for this of this slot and give you a little bit of a background on this polar prediction project, because that might also help you a little bit when it comes to developing recommendations later on in the breakout groups. And this polar prediction project is one of the main projects of the World Weather Research Program, which has been launched about 2 years ago, one of three, the other being subseasonal to seasonal prediction and high impact weather. Okay, and I would like to point out also a little bit the role of polar latitude linkages in my presentation. Just briefly, the mission statement, and I've apologized, some of you have seen it a few times. So the Polar Prediction Project is about promoting cooperative international research, enabling development of improved weather and environmental prediction services for the polar regions on timescales from hourly to seasonal. So it's about promoting cooperative international research. A very important point is it's not just weather prediction, so not just traditional atmospheric prediction, but it's environmental prediction, because we have to incorporate sea ice as well. And then the time scale, it's not just a few days out to 10 days, which is typically done and associated with numerical weather prediction, but it's all the way out to a season. Now, that's one of the flagship activities of the World Weather Research Program. And you may ask yourself, I mean, why have the polar regions now attracted so much attention? And I would like to answer this by highlighting a few points. And I've shown this yesterday already. There are significant gaps in the polar observing system. And here again, you see the conventional observations here for the southern hemisphere, here for the northern hemisphere with the Arctic, which make it into operational prediction systems. And the fewer observations you have, then the less skillful your models, basically your predictions are. And you do see these major gaps here. And the question is, you know, if we would be able to fill those gaps, what would be the increase in skill in the Arctic and the Antarctic itself? But what would be the benefit, if there's any benefit, for lower latitude predictions? And I think that's one of the main motivations of the Polar Prediction Project. But it is also one of the main motivations for us having the linkages workshop here. I would like also to point out that previous international efforts, also under the umbrella of the World Weather Research Program, always had a bias towards lower latitudes. And I think it has implications, and I would like to illustrate this with the following plot. So what you see here are mean temperature tendencies and mean temperature tendencies in Kelvin per day as a function of height here, all the way from the surface to the top of the troposphere. And then you see the mean tendency due to various processes, the dynamics, advection, and adiabatic cooling or warming, radiation, long wave and short wave, vertical diffusion, that's boundary layer turbulence primarily, convection, and large scale precipitation. And if your model, that's from the ECMWF model, if your model doesn't drift, all these terms should add up to zero. Okay, and this is for northern winter, and this is for the tropics, and this is for the Arctic only over points where Arctic sea ice is observed. You know, it's not in the marginal ice zone. So it's really the atmosphere on top of Arctic sea ice. And I think what is quite, without going into too much detail, I mean, the difference between the lower latitudes in terms of the relative importance of physical processes between lower latitudes and the Arctic, the ice-covered Arctic, is quite dramatic. Whereas here, you know, you have cooling, radiative cooling here in the free atmosphere, warming underneath. Convection then, you know, is responsible of getting rid of this convective instability, which leads here, convection is red, leads to a cooling close to the surface, warming aloft. So there's quite a richness here in the tropics and also in the mid-latitudes. I don't have to have the plots right here. When you look at the Arctic, ice-covered Arctic, you see in the free atmosphere a main balance between a warming in the atmosphere, which is the influx of heat associated primarily with the eddies, and then the radiative cooling, and then some richness develops in the boundary layer. Now, I do put this up because I think, or we think, this has implications for prediction. If you take, for instance, ensemble forecasting, people develop stochastic parameterization schemes for convection. I think that's the main activity. And you see convection is not operating at all. Not surprisingly, there's nothing to overturn, you know, no instability to overturn there. But that means also that, you know, your ensemble system, which are supposed to represent model uncertainty, they don't do a job in the high latitude that might give you too confident ensembles. So to building ensemble systems for the Arctic, certainly for ice-covered parts, you know, might need different stochastic physics schemes. I mean, that's the point, one of the points I would like to make. So some things are specific and special in the polar regions, and they need to be accounted for. I would also like to point out that there seem to be some large differences on longer time scales between actual and potential predictive skill. And this is for September sea ice extent, and that's a, from a paper of Strove et al. From 2014. It's a, something like a bit of assessment of the sea ice outlook, and you see the observations in red, and you see the blue dots, that's from the sea ice outlook, and the correlation is not overly strong here. And if you go then to models and look at potential predictability, taking one ensemble member as the truth and all the others to assess predictive skill, or predictability, then you see actually quite high levels, you know, a few weeks to months in advance. So there's some discrepancy here which needs some further exploration. And then, of course, because of the Arctic opening and changes in the polar regions, you know, that has, of course, attracted interest by various communities. And this is from a report by issued by the insurer Lloyd's here. The Arctic is likely to attract substantial investment over the coming decade, and I think we all agree that, I mean, if people do business up there in the high north, but also in the south, the environmental consequences of disasters are likely to be worse than in other regions, you know. So I think we need to be prepared. The people presumably will be going out there with their ships and take Northeast Passage in the future, and I think they need to have the predictive capability, you know, in order to avoid things from happening. Okay, and I would also touch on the importance of predictive capability when it comes to the logistics in Antarctica, on which our research efforts in climate research as well as in weather prediction research heavily rely. And a typical cost here, just to give you an example of a return of a flight from New Zealand to McMurdo with one of those planes, amounts to something like $100,000. So if you have unforeseen weather conditions and the aircraft has to turn around. But I would like now to focus perhaps a little bit on this aspect, and we have seen this before, that comes from a GIL paper which was published earlier this day and relates to the idea that perhaps improved prediction capabilities in polar regions might lead to increased skill in lower latitudes. And what we've done was we carried out 30-day forecasts with the ECMWF model, and then we carried out a second set of 30-day forecasts in which we relaxed the Arctic atmosphere only towards reanalysis data. And what we did effectively was reducing, sort of, we stopped forecast errors from developing in the Arctic only, and then looked at the impact that this has on lower latitudes. And this is here for short-term forecast, 6 to 10-day forecast, and 11 to 30-day forecast. And everywhere where you see red, you see a reduction in the forecast error of 500 hectopascal geopotential height. And given as a percentage here, black being almost 100%. Now, there's no surprise, of course, that there's a reduction over the Arctic, because that has been done by construction. There's a relaxation here. But everything outside this black circle, you know, might have to do with some teleconnectivity of the atmosphere involving relatively fast atmospheric dynamics. And what I would like to point out, that there seem to be two main pathways out of the Arctic on these timescales up to 30 days. One is over Eurasia. You know, you can see quite substantial here improvement in skill over parts of Eurasia, and perhaps a secondary one here over North America. And you in fact see very little here over the North Atlantic and over the North Pacific, suggesting that perhaps mid-latitude or lower latitude dynamics might be more important in those regions than the high latitudes, you know. At least when it comes to time scales out to 30 days. We are currently having experiments running where we go out to 4 months and repeating those same experiments. So there's some indication from those plots here that at least in certain parts over the continents that there might be some skill, that we will be able to transfer some skill into lower latitudes. But I will be discussing this in more detail in the afternoon session in the predictability and services breakout group. Okay, I perhaps... oriented branch. There's a forecasting system research branch, observation modeling, data assimilation, ensemble forecasting. That's basically exactly the same what is required in lower latitudes, but I think there are sort of specifics to the polar regions, like we need to run weather forecasts with coupled atmosphere ocean sea ice models in the future, just to give you one example. And then we have this underpinning research, and global linkages comes under that umbrella. Okay, and then the how, I mean, we do have a steering group. I don't want to go into too much detail, but we do have quite a few here. I just want to point out that we have a very nice mix of people from weather centers, but also from research and academia, and both, you know, covering the weather community and the climate community. And I would like to stress again, you know, that this polar, as part of this polar prediction project, we do have the backing of the weather prediction centers, and that's actually something which can be quite handy when it comes to setting up dedicated experiments. So when you go into your breakout groups and you are thinking about experiments, you know, think of having the numerical weather prediction centers in mind and their capabilities, because we can propose something to them and they might take this on. Okay, and then the how, we have an international coordination office. I just would like to, I mean, you might have seen it because some of the information about the workshop was on there. I skipped this here. The question also how, I mean, develop strong linkages with other initiatives. I mentioned this, linkages between academia, research, and operational centers is key. I think bring these communities together. Establish and exploit special research data. Just to give you an example, I will be coming back to this. For example, ECMWF has offered to run the first prototype coupled reanalysis for the year of polar prediction over a two-year period and align this with one of the key activities of the polar prediction project. So we do have the backing of those. Then there's a link with space agencies and so forth. I don't want to go into too much detail, perhaps just mention that we are also planning currently a spring school together with PCPI, which will be held in 2016. And sort of educates early career scientists a bit on prediction issues. And then there are plans. If you're interested, you can dive into. I don't want to go into too much detail here. And in terms of the how, of course, we also organize meetings and so forth. But again, keep this in mind, you know, having meetings, having workshops, we do have some financial means in supporting this. When you come up with recommendations, that's certainly something we could support. Okay, and I would just mention now these two flagship activities of the Polar Prediction Project, and you might have heard of those. One is the Year of Polar Prediction, and the mission statement actually is quite similar to the main one, which is perhaps not too surprising, but it is about improvement of environmental prediction capabilities for the polar regions and beyond by coordinating a period of intensive observation, modeling, prediction, verification, user engagement, and education activities. So the idea is, you know, that is a 10-year project, and you can't really measure extensively for 10 years, but to concentrate things into a two-year period, you know, and then throw really your resources into this. Ask the weather centers to carry out model experiments, ask the community to launch extra observations, and so forth. Okay, and here's a bit of a timeline, and this Year of Polar Prediction is scheduled to take place from mid-2017 to mid-2019. There will be these intensive observing periods, and they will be actually quite nice, I guess, if we manage to fill the gap, the observational gap in the polar regions. That would give us the opportunity to explore the impact that this has on mid-latitude prediction, because we could carry out data denial experiments with those. And that's certainly something that will be happening during the consolidation phase from 2019 to 2022. But I would like to say there's a very, very strong virtual component to this, and that's building on the experience and success of the Year of Tropical Convection. Okay, so the chairman is putting pressure on me. Right, PPP and linkages theme. So the polar lower latitude linkages is one of PPP's key activities. And the key question, perhaps to keep in mind for the discussion, is whether improved prediction capabilities in the polar regions enhance forecast skill in lower latitudes. And I should add, and vice versa. Okay. The opposite direction is relevant as well, of course. Perhaps you can improve things much better by, you know, in terms of polar prediction skill. Perhaps you might not measure out there in the north, but in mid-latitudes it might give you more benefit. Well possible, you know. And yeah, then we had this idea about a year ago about this international workshop, and the outcome here, we would expect recommendations to develop a plan for the implementation of the linkages theme, so to add some